Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the weekly podcast that brings together voices from leaders in all fields of social design, from architecture to planning to art, engineering. I'm your co-host, Eric Hessel, and I'm here, as always, with my trusty co-host, Emiliano Gandolfi.
Welcome.
We're excited to be continuing our series on illegality and answering this question of whether designers can be outlaws. And we've invited two very special guests from Arquitectura Expandida.
I'm really excited to introduce today a collective that has been very inspiring for us, that is called Arquitectura Expandida and was founded in Bogota. And we have here today Marina Tejedor, one of the members of this collective, and Felipe Gonzalez. So welcome, Marina and Felipe.
Hello.
Before we really start talking about your practice, I wanted to ask you maybe to present a bit better the specific socio-political context in which you're active. Because Bogota is, well, of course, the capital of Colombia. And it's a city that, like many cities in the world, has been affected heavily by neoliberal urban practices over the last years and has been growing in inequality. Particularly, I think it was interesting to see how, specifically in Bogota, like in many other South American cities, there's been a growing population that has been living in informality, so building their own houses. And I think that the choice of Arquitectura Expandida was actually to work in this kind of environment. How did you actually start this interest, and what is actually your approach?
We have been working for 5 years with Arquitectura Expandida, but of course, each member has a different story, life story. We all came from probably activist backgrounds or the academia, and the interests have always been there for us. So yes, as you say, Bogota, well, Colombia, but Bogota particularly has a very large population that lives under informal conditions, not only physical informality, in the sense that is the house that is built informally or the neighborhoods that are built informally. The whole ecosystem is informal. The economy is informal. The culture is informal. The physical spaces are informally constructed. So basically, it is people living more in the informal side of the economy than in the formal side. So this is the reality we live in. We, of course, we make part of the formal side of the society because we also have our works. We also complain with most of the regulations, but we do live in a context where the majority of people lives in conditions of informality. So it's not a choice for us. It is basically the reality we live in. As you mentioned, probably Bogota, we could say it is 60-65% built in informal conditions. So we had a melting pot to develop our research process, as we like to call it. So it's been 5 years of intense work in the peripheric areas of Bogota. It's been a longer time where we have been interested in such issues. So that's what we could say about it.
Like some other collectives in South America, your work has been specifically looking at how architecture can be engaged in a situation in which usually architects are not engaged. Usually architects build for the formal city, not for the informal city. How do you actually, as architects and as activists, get involved to the community, with a specific community, and how did you actually empower them to take more an active role as citizens?
We have been learning about it, as we say in Spanish, prueba y error, basically like trial and fail. It's a constant learning. We do not have a formula to say how do we do that. But basically, we put ourselves first as citizens. We, of course, we are not only architects. For instance, Marina comes from social human sciences. We also have people from the art world, social sciences, political sciences, audiovisuals. So it is a kind of mixed team that basically each one of us has its own approach to that particular context. But in general, let's say if we want to grab some particular points or like meeting points of how we approach those contexts, we usually get to the neighborhoods or to the territories, that, as we like to call it, through third parties, let's say a social organization, a community-based organization that is already working there, that has a longer process. What we do is basically to try to assist technically and in some context socially this kind of organization that are already working on those territories, that they do have a process, usually a long-running process, that we can, let's say, support in some way the work that they have already been doing. There is not a magic formula. Each context is very, very different. And we as an architects, we do have some tools to share with some particular group of people that are interested in, let's say, approaching their practices, their cultural practices in other ways, and that they do not have these tools that we have. So we take advantage of that in a way. And what we do with that is just try to make connection with community-based organizations. And through those community-based organizations, we actually start spreading the work in the neighborhood. But let's say that these third parties are the most important elements in order to make this click with communities, because otherwise we will be just parachuting in neighborhoods. That's something that we are basically against.
It is important to note what Felipe said. We don't have a magical formula, but this combination with the social organizations that are already working there is really, really important so it can work. So that would be the magical formula. We don't parachute there. We don't get to say what they need, but they already know how the context is, how it's working. That click, it was between them and us, and getting together all these tools we have and the tools they do have in the context or in the territory that we don't, makes the project
acknowledging that this
work.
Process is different and idiosyncratic throughout every project. What is the relationship with the government throughout your process? Is there one? And if so, could you tell us a little bit about it?
Usually the relationship is not between us and the government, but with the collective of actors that are working in the project. Usually it's not only Arquitectura Expandida, it is Arquitectura Expandida and a bunch of other community-based organizations and individuals. And it depends on each project. Sometimes it is very clashing. Usually it is with local governments. We're not talking here about national governments compared to, I don't know, Europe or United States, with federal or greater governments, just the local, maybe the neighborhood, sometimes the city. It depends. We usually try to, of course, have to be as articulated as possible with all the institutions that are present in the territory, but we do not rely on the, let's say, they granting us permissions to do or to take the next steps. These kind of decisions are taken there with the community, and we do, let's say, rely on the strategy that we build with the community in order to communicate with institutions. So let's say if we have a project nearby a natural reserve, we do know that there is a national institution that is putting an eye on that area. So we communicate with them, we send letters, the community send letters. Usually that's the way it is, because we usually come as outsiders to give some sort of technical and social support, but actually the struggle, the resistance process is inside the community. So are them, which are the ones who are taking the lead in the negotiation with the governments, and we always back in that process, basically. So it depends on each process. Usually with local municipalities, it could be a bit schizophrenic. Some institutions, some secretaries are very aligned with the work we do, but some others are more reluctant. It depends on the project, basically.
I like the definition schizophrenic. It defines wonderfully the relation that the government has with your work. So on one side, your urban action need to go beyond the legal framework, but on the other side, they're supported and recognized by institutions as necessary. So there's a kind of doubleness that creates a legal loophole that allows your work to be impactful after all. But Marina, maybe you can tell us a bit better, what are the specific needs that usually these communities that you're working with are facing?
It depends on each project and each community. We have worked in different places in the city, and actually there are always similar needs in each of them. It really depends, because some of them, we have been working in communities that are really in the process to be legalized. The neighborhoods are not yet legalized, and they don't have the law. So they have really a lot of needs. For example, in the House of the Rain in La Casa de la Lluvia in La Cecilia, it was built like 25 years ago. It's in the forest, we can say. And they're still struggling on the process to be legalized. What they needed was more of a space to get together, but to have some place somewhere to stand there. And that was a process that we worked with them for 8 months, and it was really nice. And I believe that it helped this process of legalizing. But we have worked in other contexts where the neighborhood is already legalized and is really, we can say, formalized. And their needs are different. So maybe they need some other cultural places. We have been working on that a lot. And so it really depends on the place we work. But what we can say is that all of them, or one of the similarities of all the contexts we have worked on, is that they really have to fight for the territory and really have to fight against the local institutions to get recognized and to be part of or get what the city is now
doing. Basically, as Marina said, there is not one particular need that unites the whole neighborhoods or the whole communities. But there are similarities, let's say. People are usually interested in spaces for encounter, quality spaces for encounter. Of course, we here in Bogota and in Colombia, we use all of the street. The street is a place for socialize, for interact with others. But you also need close spaces with quality. So usually people look for that. And in that way, we also like to include and to negotiate with communities. What else besides encounter and socialization we do have for this space? So the process begins for that. And I would also like to make a clarification there about this concept that you have been using throughout the interview, and it's about the illegality. I mean, it's not that we like to work on under the law or outside the law. That is not the reality. Actually, we like to call it illegality in the sense that there are sometimes there are not regulations for the things that we're doing. As Marina said, there is an illegal neighborhood that we're working in. Already the context is illegal, but what can we do when there is people that they have a structural lack of everything? And there is no other way to do things than finding other ways. Let's say, if we want to build in a neighborhood when we do not have the building permission, what we use and what we've been using before is not as a building, but as a mobiliary. Let's say, if we build that for 5 years and we have to dismantle it, we will dismantle it. That is the kind of negotiations with local authorities, because we do know that there are contexts that under any circumstances you could build something there, but there is people living there. There is people who are willing to put effort in building something for their own joy, for their own process of socialization, for their interaction inside the communities. So that's the kind of context we like to work in order to support those struggles and those process of resistance. But also, it's a way to shouting out, hey, to the governments, actually, to local governments, to national governments, hey, there is people here with the structural needs. So what are we going to do about it? So that's what we are very cautious when we talk about illegality or illegality. We also like to talk about legitimacy. That is the way we also like to refer to the processes we carry on.
This is a fascinating tension between illegality, allegality, and legitimacy. And I think they all have very specific but related definitions that we need to be careful about how we deploy in the context of our cities. I think you're absolutely right in that our cities have grown beyond existing legal frameworks, and that puts them squarely in the camp of allegality as opposed to illegality. We have to take a quick break. Nobody go anywhere. We're going to be right back. Further conversation from Arquitectura Expandida. You're listening to Social Design Insights. Thank you for listening to Social Design Insights. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation and the Curry Stone Design Prize. Each week, we strive to bring you the voices of leading practitioners of socially minded design from all fields. For 10 years, the Curry Stone Design Prize has been seeking, finding, and celebrating emerging practices in socially minded design. For further information on this episode, the show, or social design itself, please visit our website at currystonedesignprize.com. On the website, you'll find all sorts of fun stuff. You can find documentary videos on all of the past winners of the Curry Stone Design Prize going back for 10 years. You can also find narratives on all Curry Stone Design Prize winners and Social Design Circle members. On the website, there's multiple galleries of photos of our winners' work for your use, as well as links for further research. Welcome back to Social Design Insights. I'm your co-host, Eric Kessel, and I'm here with my co-host, Emiliano Gandolfi. And we've been talking with social design practitioners, Arquitectura Expandida, about the distinctions between illegality and allegality. Philippe, at another level, what you've been talking about strikes me as a distinction between what is legal and what is just.
Well, as Philippe said, we always want to play between legality and legitimacy. So we always play between that. Well, we believe we're doing what is needed. And what Felipe said, there are people there and there are people with needs. So actually, we believe that we're doing what the state should do, even if it's not something, not illegal, but illegal. Even if it's something illegal that is not ruled, it's needed and it's legitimate to do it. So I guess this kind of process, we find out, we've had quite a lot of problems with the local institutions and other institutions, or like the urban institutions or in Bogota, with this process, because sometimes they want to shut them down, or they weren't supporting the process or the building. But we found out that after that, they recognize the place and they use it for their own, I don't know, activities. So, for example, La Casa de la Lluvia is already being used by the local mayor to do some meetings with the neighbors there. There are already cultural activities or activities for young mothers or different things about the neighborhood. So I really believe that activists or people working in this direction really make a difference, because even if the local government or the institutions are against the process during the process, after that, they recognize it. So we came to a point where we had La Casa del Viento, and they wanted to shut it down, the construction, once, and we just found out a way to say that it was a Christmas thing, like a building we were doing for Christmas, so they didn't do it. And after that, they gave us a prize, like the local, Bogota gave us a prize for that construction. So they have this schizophrenia, but at the end, they get to recognize the place, and they get to recognize the community, and they get to recognize that is a nice thing, and that is, it has a use and a value for what is happening in the city. So I guess all these processes that have been done, really struggling sometimes against the legal procedures, are really helping and making a click, so the local government can and institutions can change their way to look at the city and at the neighborhoods and at the local associations.
Most of the individuals that have been engaged in activism and activism related to social and infrastructural movements, they are probably now in the past years taking the institutions. So probably in a few decades, regulations are going to start complying with reality, because what activists do is basically make points about something that people is actually not looking at. So let's say, what is people doing in the neighborhoods for 60, for 70 years is self-construction their neighborhoods. And that is something that usually is not taken into account when an urban plan is built up. So what is happening in the past years is those activists, they have been working in different areas of Bogota and in different areas of Colombia. They are in some localities making part of these decision-making platforms. So at some point, it will have some benefits to the local policy. The thing is, like here, local politics are dominated by one particular class, so it's going to be very difficult to have a structural change. But now, in the recent years of Bogota, you can see some changes in the policy. But for the size of the city, for the scale of the city, it's very, very complicated to regulate for the whole thing. I think that looking particularly to the territories and to the specific realities of each area of Bogota would be way more smarter. The thing is, like here, we like to import the model. So we export the European model and we apply it to Bogota. We export the American model. We apply it to Bogota. We're here like not trying to look what are the variables we have in territory and to create politics and regulations for those particular realities. And there is a lot of people inside the institution thinking about that. So it's just finding the right moment to make the switch there.
Well, that sounds very promising, Felipe. What I think will be also interesting to raise the attention, especially of our listeners, is that, in fact, you use buildings and architecture very much as a tool, not exactly as a final product. Perhaps you could tell more about what is your specific process. In fact, how do you convince people to build something? And what is actually a community's involvement once you actually decide that something should be constructed?
I guess convincing is not the word. Actually, when we get to the territory or to the community, it's normally that we don't contact them. Like in the process, the beginning of the process, it's not that we contact them, but somehow they have already get to know our work through other people, other projects we have already done. So they already know what they need, or they contact us because they have a need, right? So that really helps and facilitates the process, because it's not that we get there because we want to construct something and we just try to convince them about what they need, but it's the other way around. They actually, it's like they convince us that we should work together. on that base, we see what they need when we hear them, and we get together and we discuss and we see what we can get, we can achieve, because actually we our structure is limited. So, and we get together and we talk a lot. Before constructing, it takes months of talking to each other and seeing what we need and talking about with the community and seeing if the community is involved and if they're engaged in the process and how we're going to articulate it. Once we get there, we, as you said, we use architecture as a tool. So it's not that the product itself, but in the process, and we work every weekend. So there are long processes, like between, 4 and 8 months each process. We get to build different things. So it's not that we're going to build an encounter space and that's it, but a lot of things happen every weekend between the community and other collectives and other activists that are getting involved in the process. So what really marked the process is that we combine their needs and our needs maybe or our interests, and we get to build another collective between the community and us and other people that get involved in the process because they are interested in it, each with its interest but with a common interest, and a lot of things happen. So for example, we've processes where we started to build a communitarian space, an encounter space, and it became a cultural space with a lot of things happening and really building something else and empowering the community, which are already really, really empowered. So it's not convincing, it's that they know their needs and we get together to build a new project all together, like with a new collective.
I find this fascinating because it shows a bit how the shifting role of the profession leads to a much more community engaged approach to how we can actually sense the specific issues that communities are facing, but also trying to build holistically the solutions, not with a big plan that is replicable in every case, but just looking from the emergence of specific needs and specific solutions from local savoir-faire, so local forms of knowledge.
Would you consider the work that you're doing, and perhaps by extension the Bogota model, something that's translatable to a lot of urban centers around the world? And maybe what we're looking at is really a very translatable new form of urbanism.
That's a very, very tough question, because although we have had the chance to go around some other, let's say, Latin American cities, capitals, let's say, to compare with the size of Bogota, the dynamics are very, very, very different. The political context, the cultural context is very different. So it is very complicated just to translate. I think what we can take out of our process is what we just said before. It's all about dialogue. If there is dialogue in the process, the encounter with people, the one-to-one relationship, that is completely transportable to other contexts. Probably there is few people who are actually willing to take that effort in. As Emilio said, we also have another activities in our lives. This is our life project, of course, but we do other things aside, and you need a lot of commitment. People who work on ground, on field, are people who have a great burden on their shoulders. So there is a lot of frustration going around these processes. So you need one kind of particular individual to take on this kind of endeavor. So I think it is completely transportable to other contexts, but the thing that is actually transportable is this desire to dialogue with people and to make agreement with people to the embetterment of their context, to improve their infrastructure, to basically look for this kind of transformation that we are looking for. But it's about this kind of process, that the relationship should be as close as possible, and that is very difficult in the world we live in. So I think that is why our work has worked, because we are willing to go to that specificity. We are willing to go down there, but there is not a lot of people who is willing to do that. Even more, there is not a lot of people who is willing to do that for a long period of time. So it's very difficult. There is a lot of organization, there is a lot of institutions around Latin America that are doing things that very similarly. So we are very excited, because here in South America, there is a big movement of, let's say, bottom-up initiatives. In one way, this informality that Latin America is rooted on, has allowed that these kind of movements come out with greater strength. It's not like maybe a movement like ours in the United States with those kind of strict regulations, or maybe in Europe would be another thing. For us, the South American context is the perfect context for this to happen. So that is why we have been very potent on our message. That is why I think we have reached the levels that we have reached.
Felipe and Marina, well, thank you very much. I really hope that Arquitectura Expandida will show somehow the way for this slow revolution in design, for a more networked urbanism, as you were mentioning, and for an architecture and a design that is more dialogue-driven with communities rather than ideologically or aesthetically driven. I really think that what you guys are doing is not only pioneeristic, but is actually can be a very feasible model for a different approach. Considering that you need specific kind of personalities to do it, but also that progressively through a political intention, things can actually change in how they are made. I wanted to thank you very much for your time and congratulate your entire collective for all the achievement that you reached so far. And to conclude, I also wanted to honor the communities that you have been working with for their perseverance and the act of resistance toward building better and more just neighborhoods. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the invitation. And all you said, Emiliano, we hope that it happens. And thank you for the invitation.
Yes, thank you to you both. And for our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Marina and Felipe of Arquitectura Expandida. For further information on the work of Arquitectura Expandida, you can visit our website at currystonedesignprize.com. There you'll find useful links for further research as well as galleries of their projects. Social Design Insights has been an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation and the Curry Stone Design Prize. If you haven't found us yet on Facebook and Twitter, please do so for all the latest news on social design.